This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Wanna Be Starting Something, the lead track from Michael Jackson's Thriller, what I believe is still the biggest selling album of all time, produced by Quincy Jones, who passed away over the weekend.
Yeah, at least according to the New York Times obit, it is still the biggest selling album of all time. The Quincy Jones, I don't know, I almost couldn't believe everything he had done reading about him. 28 Grammys, which is, I think, third. He arranged Sinatra's Sinatra at the Stands, at the Sands album, soundtracks for a million things, including The Color Purple. He obviously did the We Are the World concert. He produced Off the Wall, Bad, and Thriller. He married Peggy Lipton, among other people.
Maybe his greatest achievement, really.
Yeah. We worked with Leslie Gore on It's My Party. He contributed to Roots. He produced The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He started the hip-hop magazine Vibe. It's just unbelievable, his array of you probably knew all this. I did not.
Right. Yeah, I do most of that. He was a major figure in like American music and American culture, you know, certainly second half of the 20th century. The range is wide. I think the Michael Jackson stuff is what he's most associated with, just because Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad, those three albums in a row were just, Thriller is the blockbuster of all blockbusters as an album. He does have a sound. Once you get to that period, obviously It's My Party by Leslie Gore sounds different.
But right.
Once you get to that period, it is a sound that I do think is very tied to its era a little bit. Like it's a very Los Angeles studio kind of sound, you know,
right.
It's a very upscale, polished kind of sound, which is not necessarily my favorite kind of thing, but obviously like a mammoth figure in American culture.
Died at the age of 91. All right. The injury report dropped Friday. We got more on Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart both week to week. And then Vince Williams will be returning in 2 to 4 weeks, is how that was phrased. How did it strike you?
I thought it was it was not the worst case scenario. I more fear the worst than expect the best on this stuff. And so with the Bane and Smart injuries, it certainly could have been worse. Now, week to week is very uncertain, so who knows what that means, right? But I was bracing myself for, we'll be reevaluated in a month with one of those guys, and that's not what we got. The Vince Williams thing, the timetable is sort of what I was still expecting, but at least we got some kind of sense of finality to it. It was not a It was not a will be reevaluated. It was a will return, which was good to see. And so, they got 2 or 3 weeks to sort of muddle through this until they start getting some of these guys back. Of course, one guy not on the injury report who is still out is Luke Kennard. I think the expectation is he will be back sooner than those guys.
Will be back in 2 to 4 weeks. That is, how does that relate to week to week? In other words, which would you prefer to be? You'd prefer to be promising?
Week to week is a wider range. There's better outcomes and worse outcomes on either end of that, right? And so it's a real question. Who's going to appear in a Grizzlies uniform in a game first? Is it going to be Vince Williams, Desmond Bane, or Marcus Smart? That's a very unknown thing because of that uncertainty. And so I like the sense of finality on the Vince Williams thing. The will be back. A promise is being made that he will be back.
Yeah. Cam Spencer will not. That was
maybe ever. There's an APB out on Cam Spencer's ankle.
Yeah,
we're trying to locate it.
What do we think is going on? What was the gist of the Cam Spencer deal?
Well, he had some kind of ankle sprain. I'd been told at the time, oh no, this is a real ankle sprain. Like, this was a pretty bad ankle sprain. And since they've added some other designation to it, so there's like something beyond the ankle sprain that's related. And so I don't know. I mean, we are talking about like a late second round pick on a 2-way contract. So I haven't been sweating it too much.
Right. All right. In the meantime, Grizzlies go to Philadelphia and obviously a greatly reduced Sixers team. No Joel Embiid. They win convincingly. Some really nice numbers there. There's seven players in double digits. There's 35 assists, 70 points in the paint, on and on and on. What did you make of that effort?
They caught a really good rhythm. Now, they've been assisted. It's funny, you look at the schedule before the season starts and you think one thing,
right,
and then you get a different thing. Because you look at it and you think, oh, well, Chicago and Brooklyn, those teams are terrible. But then the Milwaukee and Philly, those teams are good. But it's been the opposite. Chicago and Brooklyn have been really competitive to start the season. And Philly and Milwaukee are in total distress and disarray.
Right.
And so sort of is what it is. So there's a schedule component to this, too. I mean, they caught those teams at the right time. But they caught a good rhythm. And it's funny how the rhythm can slip in and out of gear so quickly. Could you look at this season? But the Grizzlies really caught a rhythm and played great against Orlando and then the first half against Chicago, and that was 72 minutes of really good basketball for the most part. And then suddenly it slips out of gear and you have 72 minutes of bad basketball in the second half against Chicago and then the full game against Brooklyn. And now you're back in gear again for two games against Milwaukee and Philly. Like, you know, past performance does not guarantee future results. But I do think, like, they found a good rhythm in these games. I think stylistically, a lot of stuff is really working, really humming. And I think John Morant and Jared Jackson look great. And that is something that, you know, won't happen every night, but should happen most nights, right? Because those guys are really good.
Just to underline your earlier point, Chicago and Brooklyn each have three wins, so six between them, and Philadelphia and Milwaukee each have a single win. They are 2-9. Collectively. So I think, right, honestly, we, you know, Jeffrey and I did the W's and L's before the season began. I think we're about where we would have thought we would have been, just got there in a different way. And obviously, you don't know what's in, and the injuries are significant, if not devastating. And so in the meantime, we do have continued good play from Jalen Wells, which has been promising. We have continued playing. Who would have imagined? We're talking Jalen Wells and Jay Huff here as massive contributors to this early start.
So this is what I'm writing about today for my weekly column that'll go tomorrow morning, and hopefully tonight's game won't disrupt what I'm already going to write. And I won't have to tweak it too much. I think that you would have a sense that, like, the injury and the absence issues were more profound at the start of last season than the start of this season. It's not entirely clear that's true. Based on the injury report going into tonight, like, if you take the 15-man rosters at the beginning of the season and you sort of map them out of, if everyone's healthy, here's what the starters would be, here's what the second team would be, here's what the third team would be, the Grizzlies will have missed as many games from first and second team guys through the first eight games of this season as they did the first eight games of last season. And in fact, players deeper on the depth chart have been pushed higher up than last season. Last year, they started 1-7, and the top three guys in minutes played in the first eight games were Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Marcus Smart. Right now, and I don't think this will necessarily change after tonight, the top three players in minutes played are Safi Aldama, Jake LaRavia, and Scottie Pippen Jr., and Jalen Wells is fourth. That's one second-team guy and three third-team guy, or top four guys in minutes played.
Now, that's also, you do have Ja, you just haven't,
yes.
I mean, it's,
yes,
some of that's strategic, not just health, right? Or maybe the strategy is related to impaired health.
Yeah, well, I mean, regardless of any of that, it's just the minutes are the minutes.
Right.
Now, the fact that you have had more Ja underscores how important Ja is. As good as Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson are, it sort of just underscores that Ja is the guy on the team. So that is part of it. But also a part of it, and this is sort of what I'm writing about, is that third team, ostensibly third string guys on this roster have been forced into bigger roles and have played better this season than second team guys did a year ago. And that is part of this story. It's, you know, if you map out the 50-man roster, third team was going to be Scottie Pippen and Jake LaRavia and Jalen Wells and Jay Huff. And they're all playing really well.
Yeah, unbelievable. Is it of? I mean, some of that is a credit. By the way, coaching staff was getting pounded last week. I do think you have to credit the coaching staff for getting those guys ready and incorporating them and all of that. Some of that, and then obviously, I mean, they got to rely on Jalen Wells, a second round pick, for the minutes that they're relying on him for. But so of these players. Who has been the most pleasant surprise for you, both in the moment and going forward? Like, what's been the happiest development of these, the guys who are seeing a lot of action who we may not have anticipated?
I think it's Wells, because he is a rookie second-round pick. I mean, Pippen and Huff are in their first seasons on a main roster, but they've been playing professional basketball for a few years, and they're older. So Wells is the youngest. Wells is the least experienced. He was a later pick. This is not a first-round pick. And I think Wells has, and we're seven games in at this point, so, have some trepidation with projecting out forward. But Wells is the one player among the four who has likely the greatest future potential with the roster. You try to project this out and what guys are going to be like the rest of this season, not only the rest of this season, but next season and the year after and all of that. Like, Jalen Wells has sort of entered the chat. Like, there was this thing about, Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson have emerged, and either one of those guys could be the future starter. Like, Marcus Smart's keeping that space, that seat warm, but long-term, like, who's the fifth starter with Ja and Bane and Jaren Zaghibi? Like, it could be Gigi Jackson. It could be Vince Williams. I think that's still more likely. But, like, Jalen Wells is a 6'7 dude who shoots threes and plays decent defense. Right. He's entered the chat. Like, he's now made himself part of that conversation.
Yeah, really promising. Remarkably promising to find him where they found him. And that's, by the way, and you pointed this when Scottie Pippen was signed and when Jay Huff has emerged and been signed, that is no disrespect to them, who are also great value on their in what they're contributing, given their contracts and everything else.
Yeah, no, completely. I think, you have to be thrilled with the level of contribution you've gotten. And don't miss LaRavia, too. Like, LaRavia is second on the team in minutes through seven games. And
unbelievable.
Jake LaRavia is second on the team in minutes. And they're 4-3.
Incredible. All right, so Brooklyn tonight, Brooklyn revenge game. And by the way, it's not just, they've been pesky not just against the Grizzlies, right?
Yeah, no, who did they beat? They beat Milwaukee too. Everyone beat Milwaukee, and they're one of them. No, Brooklyn. I do think, like, Chicago is the Eastern Conference is sort of a mess right now. I think Chicago is a team that can look up and say, "Hey, maybe we can keep this up, and we can compete for the playoffs or whatever." I think Brooklyn at some point is going to hit the eject button and go and start tanking. But right now, there's no NBA players on that roster. Dorian Finney-Smith and Cameron Johnson and Nick Claxton, who didn't play the first game against the Grizzlies, and Dennis Schroeder and Cam Thomas. That's five real NBA players. And they're playing well right now with the new head coach. And so it's not a team to be taken lightly.
And then, speaking of injuries, New Orleans absolutely devastated by injuries as well. We always, as you point out, we think this is a Memphis issue. It's not a Memphis issue. You got C.J. McCollum out, DeJounte Murray's out, Trey Murphy's been out, Herb Jones has been out.
Yeah.
So they're devastated as well. Who, by the way, early on, who Milwaukee and Philadelphia bad and worrisomely bad, although with Philadelphia, at least, they've been doing it without their players. I mean,
right.
Chris Middleton, obviously not in Milwaukee. Who should be worried who had expectations coming into this season?
Oh, I think Milwaukee is far and away the team. Milwaukee is down bad. And I don't see, they shouldn't be this bad, but I don't see a way that they come out of it and be anywhere close to what they wanted to be. I just think we really saw, I thought going into the season, I was sort of down on Milwaukee and Denver relative to conventional wisdom for the same reason, is that I thought even though those two teams had maybe the two best players in the world, the rest of the roster had gotten really creaky and really fragile around them. And I thought that depth was going to have a lot to say about this regular season. And I think there are other things I wrote that don't look as good, but like those two things look about right. But I think it's far more serious with Milwaukee right now. I mean, we saw it. That team is not good once you get past Giannis. And then we saw a bad Dame night, but even with a good Dame night, the rest of the roster is what it is.
On the other hand, in the West, which, as you pointed out, there's going to be a team or two. If you're throwing San Antonio in there, a team or two.
Or three if the Clippers still think they're a playoff team.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes. That is going to be that wants to be in the play-in at the very least, and will be sorely disappointed because right now, Minnesota and New Orleans are the teams that would miss, and the Clippers, Minnesota, New Orleans, and the Clippers would all miss. And you look up, and you can't really find, you know, it's not like a Brooklyn team's above them. Like there's no bad team above them.
I mean, there's San Antonio up there. Right. I don't believe in Antonio sustaining that. Right. So I think San Antonio and Minnesota are going to flip. I think that's something that will happen.
But is it worrisome from the good? Not the, you know, if you're looking at the team that you expected the Grizzlies to be jockeying with behind Oklahoma City, let's say, and maybe Dallas, it would have included Phoenix, Golden State, and the Lakers, all of whom look good.
I think this is one of the reasons people, myself included to some degree, got a little bit out of shape about the Chicago and Brooklyn losses. Not because it suggested some fundamental flaw with the roster, not because it suggested the Grizzlies can't be as good as they want to be. It was because those games are sort of there to be won, and it felt like if you just push down on the pedal just a little bit more, maybe you take those games, and the fear that, like, all these games are going to matter. Like, you can't afford to be wasting games, you know, when you given the makeup of the standings and the way the playoff race is going to go.
It's funny, though. Like, in the end, we're also counting on – I don't mean it, and we're hoping for, but you're sort of assuming injury on the part of those old rosters, right? Phoenix, Golden State, and the Lakers, all of them. So there you go. And then finally, also in Philadelphia, and I know this is not what you most like to talk about, locker room antics. We had Joel Embiid confronting Marcus Hayes over a column. Kind of reminded me of the Jason Williams thing because I thought the column was stinky, honestly. Like, it was a fine column, but if you read what he got mad about, I do understand why Joel Embiid was mad.
I feel like, let's cut to the end first. It's not a reason to put your hands on the guy in a locker room.
There's no excuse
for that, period. But I feel like I haven't read the whole column, but I read those paragraphs that were floating around, like this is what he got mad about. I feel like if I were an editor, I would have bumped on that paragraph and I would have said, like, do you really need to bring this up to make the point you're making? You can still make the point you're making in a really strong way and really go at him for what you think is, you know, underperformance or not taking things seriously enough without invoking the family stuff. It felt gratuitous to me, certainly.
100%. It was. For folks who haven't seen it, here's the offending paragraphs are as follows. Joel Embiid consistently points to the birth of his son Arthur as the major inflection point in his basketball career. He often says that he wants to be great, to leave a legacy for the boy named after his little brother, who tragically died in an automobile accident when Embiid was in his first year as a 76er. Well, in order to be great at your job, you first have to show up for work. Embiid has been great at just the opposite. Now in his 11th season, he consistently has been in poor condition. This poor conditioning apparently seems to have delayed his debut this season. Embiid won't play in Wednesday's opener or the next two games. And you're exactly right. He could have said all of those things without bringing his son or his brother into it. The problem, of course, is that most of us, I mean, you know, if you were an editor, how closely are things edited these days? I don't know what's happening in the Philadelphia newspapers, but
no, that's 100%. That's 100% right. So you have to, as a writer, you need to be your own editor. You know, you have editors and we need editors, but we also have to be our own editors as a first line of defense against what we put out there under our own name. Right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
It's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We had a couple, Jeffrey, over the weekend, we had a couple instances of players acting badly, having been confronted by people who are acting badly, right? And so we had this one. Joel Embiid got into it with Marcus Hayes in the locker room afterwards and ended up putting his hands on him in some fashion. You can't do that, like, period. Right. You can't do that.
And
the truth of the matter is most people on social media were like, good for Joel Embiid. I would have beaten the hell out of this guy, too, for bringing it, like, whatever. People, that's the reaction. And I understand that. And emotionally, I'm on Joel Embiid's side here. That was a tacky, unnecessary column to write. And but he should have did what Jason Williams did to me, which was just yell at me and take my pen. And even that, Jason Williams was fined $25,000. For a column that honestly I thought was a crappy column in retrospect. I shouldn't have written it. I didn't bring his family into it. That was just a stupid column. For who don't know the story, Jason Williams said this was after they'd lost three games in a row at the start of the third sweep season. Jason Williams said something like, you know, even if we lose, I still have my family and whatever else. It's, you know, and I ripped him for it. It was just stupid. It was just stupid. He didn't mean he didn't care. He was just saying words. You know, it was a stupid column, and he was right to yell at me. But Mike Miller was there to make sure he didn't hit me or
right,
pull whatever. He might have. Like, he was hot. He was hot. But Mike Miller was there to happily intercede. And so there you go. Someone needed to be there to intercede to keep Joel Embiid off of Marcus Hayes because he shouldn't have put his hands on him. Having said that, don't you think I totally understand Joel Embiid's fury here, and I think it was a crappy thing to put in a column.
Yeah, when you read the column, you're like, how is this necessary?
Is it nothing to do with anything?
Yes. That was my exact reaction.
And nothing to do with it. Joel Embiid comes in out of shape, hurt, malingering, whatever else, write that. But you don't have to say.
You don't have to bring his brother into it. You don't have to bring his son into it. Like that was completely unnecessary.
All right. So that was one player acting badly in response to someone acting badly. Then you had Jason Kelce.
Yep.
Who was confronted by someone taunted him with, your brother is a homophobic slur because he's dating Taylor Swift.
Right.
And Kelce grabs the guy's phone, slams it to the ground, and says, who's the F now?
Yeah.
The homophobe, using the same homophobic slur. Well, in the end, I just don't understand. I don't understand what the need to taunt Jason Kelce like that. It's above board, ridiculous behavior on the part of that person. And I don't mind at all that their phone was smashed, right? At all.
Yes.
At all. Screw you.
He went up and, like, he
in his
instigated
face.
Like,
he totally
like, yeah,
instigated
like, he was
it.
Trying to, he totally was trying instigated. To have something happen.
Still probably shouldn't use the homophobic slur right back at him, though. Shouldn't.
I mean,
shouldn't.
Okay.
I'm just going to say you shouldn't.
That's fine. Like, you know what I mean?
You're
like,
using it. I don't think it's the same way. And in that moment, you're just hot.
Yeah.
And justifiably hot, right? But anyway, there's no question. I'm not equating
Jason Kelce was looking for trouble.
Well, it's not also, yes, but that's true. But it was not only that. Jason Kelce didn't use the homophobic slur first. It's not a word that
right.
just occurred to him to call someone. Right.
It was just in direct
using
response
it,
to how he used it against.
So, I'm basically on the side of Embiid and Kelce here. But in the moment, you're hot, you know. And so there you go. Did we have any other instances of that over the weekend?
So we had not over the weekend, but the Cowboys, was it Trayvon Diggs and the reporter made up after the D's nuts joke? It wasn't with the reporter, but Dak got caught on the sideline saying we effing suck.
Well, there's truth.
What
is it? Truth is 100% defense.
Correct.
Right? What do they say there? Truth is a, defense.
Well, we had the Derek Carr. So Chris Olave, after the Chris Olave concussion, which was awful, Michael Thomas, the former receiver, was going off on him on Twitter, and then Derek Carr
I thought Derek Carr's
comments. I thought he handled it well.
I thought Derek Carr's comments were perfect. Perfect. So Chris Olave gets concussed.
Yes.
And Michael Thomas goes after him on Twitter and just basically accuses him of, might as well have concussed him himself.
Yeah, he was trying to get Chris Olave concussed.
And Derek Carr asked about it afterwards, and I thought he was great. He basically said, listen, I've had a lot of teammates in my life. I try to respect them all. I'm totally paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
I got no idea why this dude hates me. I'm sorry, whatever's going on in his life, that he hates me like this.
I've reached out multiple times
to him. He won't call me back. Of course, I love Chris Olave. We have a great relationship. S happens. It's football, right?
Yeah.
I don't obviously try to hang people out, receivers out. I just thought Derek Carr was so classy in the way that, because he even expressed empathy,
yeah.
not in sort of a, Not even a demeaning way.
No, no.
He was just like expressed empathy for him. I thought it was really well done in a tough situation. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. This is a good season to be getting engaged. And if you're thinking about getting engaged, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers. It is the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings. It's where Jeffrey went when he was getting engaged. There's all kinds of reasons for this. One is the meant-to-be guarantee. If you buy your loose diamond custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have, it's almost hard to believe, 365 days to return it. Just head on in there. If you can dream it, they can make it. So you bring a photo or an idea or whatever, and the Robert Irwin folks will create that ring. They got all kinds of financing options, included 24-month deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. But I'll just tell you, the experience is, it's informative, it's low-key, it's not high pressure, it's not, you know, it is the place to buy and to start your journey towards getting engaged. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. They've got convenient locations across Memphis. I go to one on Perkins Extended, right across from Novel, or check them out at rijewelers.com. Jeffrey, I do want to talk about the NFL. Before I do that, just to go back briefly to Memphis football and basketball. It's sort of an interesting place right now because nothing's a disaster.
Right. It's not like the sky is falling.
But the way we talk about it, it is almost as if it is a disaster. It's mediocrity plus, right? For both, but both of these programs are picked. Memphis is picked second in basketball in the conference, and Memphis football is, you know, they lost two games.
Yeah.
And yet it is.
They've lost two road games.
Yeah, and so yeah, and so. It's not a disaster, and it's interesting. It goes back to the conference, right? And one of the things you'll hear in the wake of this discussion is sometimes people who aren't Memphis fans, sometimes even people who aren't Memphis fans will say, I don't know why you all talk about this conference being bad. We can't even win this conference. Who are we talking about? We're too good for this conference when we can't even win the conference, right?
Right.
And to some extent, listen, I take the point. Dominate the damn conference. That's what UCF did once upon a time. That's what Cincinnati did once upon a time. Go dominate the conference. It's what Houston did in basketball. Dominate the conference. There's no reason Memphis can't be to this conference in basketball what Houston was to this conference in basketball, or Memphis can't be to this conference in football what Cincinnati or UCF were to this conference in football. Like, do that. And it is Memphis's own fault that they haven't done that, and it's to the discredit. That is a failure on the part of the coaches. They have the resources. They should be dominant teams in the conferences, and they've fallen short of that. But it doesn't. Their inability to do that does not invalidate the point that the conference also hurts them, that there is a real reason to still be in a better conference. Because what you see for both basketball and football is the same damn dilemma. You go down to play UTSA, there is nothing you can do in that game except lose. Like, there's no win. There's right. No win available. You beat them, everybody yawns and says they stink. You lose, which, and if you, by the way, it's a football game.
Yeah.
Freaking Ole Miss lost to Kentucky. Like, things happen, yeah. Right? Look at Georgia week to week. That's Georgia, for God's sakes. You can lose football games. But both in football and in basketball, they are in a position where they can't lose games, or people will call them a fraud and a failure. And yet by winning the games, they get no credit for them that at all. And that is purely a product of the fact that they are in this miserable, 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 miserable conference.
And further, because you're in this miserable conference, even if you have a year where you don't win the league or even get to the league title game, there's not enough games out there that you're like, well, that was a fun game. Like, it was win. Like, you know, like,
plus then the financial disparities, yes, and everything else on top of it. It gets to be harder to recruit. It gets to be harder to be, yes, nationally relevant. It gets to be harder to excite your fan base because you are nationally relevant. It's why back when we had this discussion about the PAC, and again, I'm not relitigating that actual decision, but it's why people were so enthusiastic about the possibility of change, because reality stinks. And you know, if you are in, again, I'm not I'm not particularly dazzled by the job that Ryan Silverfield has done. But if you are in his chair, it must be frustrating, too, that you will lose two road games and everyone's basically, you know, once you run out of town.
Right.
And that's a product of being in the conference. All right, onward to the NFL. I don't know, Jeffrey. We had the news, which we opened the show with, yep. Dennis Allen canned. And so we've already had Robert Saleh canned, and I think we can safely predict, don't you think this is true, that there will be a new coach in Dallas after this year and a new coach in Jacksonville after this year?
Yes.
And maybe, likely, a new coach in Chicago after this year.
Yes, that would be one that I'd add. I mean, you keep hearing whispers, maybe New England as well.
That would be a
one and done.
That would be a pulling the plug because it ain't working thing.
Yeah.
But
I think you're going to have a new coach in Oakland, too.
Oakland.
Vegas. The Raiders going to have a new coach.
Are they going to have a new coach?
I think so.
They just fired their OC.
Yeah, but
they're going to fire. They're going to pull the plug there too.
The rumors are that Brady is taking a hand in this.
Right. So interesting. And then you have. I mean, we're going to get to the top of the league here in a moment. But you have a really fascinating. It's interesting. There's a lot of bad teams.
Yes, there are.
And we have a fascinating race to the bottom, which we like watching here because, well, A, because your Giants are involved in this race to the bottom. Here are the two win teams. There are no one or zero win teams. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yes. The Dolphins, the Patriots, the Raiders, the Browns, the Titans, the Jaguars. That's your AFC two win teams. And then your NFC two-win teams are the Giants, the Panthers, and the Saints.
Yes, and we're sending Giants Panthers to Germany this week, literally.
7 2-win teams.
Yeah.
So you could be that bad and pick seventh in this draft.
That is right now the situation facing the Giants right now. At 2-7, they are picking seventh.
All right, I'll tell you this. A two-win team that is not bad at all?
The Dolphins.
The Dolphins.
Agreed.
In fact, the truth of the matter is the Dolphins have now lost 13 of 14 to the Bills, right? They've lost.
I think Josh is 15-2.
It's crazy. And if you are a Dolphins fan, like yesterday's
game. You can't win yesterday.
Yesterday's game was like, what the hell do we have to do to win this game? In fact, as the field goal was going through, they showed shot of Tua. He invoked the Lord's name.
Yeah.
Because what the hell are you? Tua was magnificent.
Yeah.
He missed three passes, and one of which, by the way, was a screen that was blown up early. He just threw it away. It wasn't a missed pass.
He was clocking it.
It's a magnificent. Tua was terrific. They ran all over the Bills. The Bills could not stop them. The Teron Johnson fumble, that was huge.
Yes, the punch out.
That was a huge play in that game. But if you can't beat the Bills when the Bills can't stop you at all, you're doing everything you need to do. That must be incredibly frustrating for the Dolphins.
Congrats on it. Was this the fifth straight division title?
The Bills do have an interesting run in the middle of the season. I'm not saying it's going to cost them the title, but they play like, I don't have it in front of me. They play the Chiefs in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, the Lions, the 49ers, and someone else who's decent. Someone else who's good. In a four week stretch, that's testing will be interesting.
So they have the Colts this week on the road, Kansas City the next week, San Francisco. Both Kansas City and San Francisco are at home, at the Rams who are playing better.
That was the third. That was when I forgot. And then the Lions.
But you do get to finish the season.
Yes, you get to finish with two Pats games. Oh no, it's a soft. It's,
yes,
they're going to win the division. There's no question. You asked a question which I think is an interesting one.
Yes,
if you right now had to pick a team that would be in the Super Bowl, and I would give you $1,000 if you got it right, I'd give you those same crisp $100 bills. I'd go get 10 more, and I'd say, all you have to do, Jeffrey, is tell me the team that will be in the Super Bowl. What team would you pick?
I think I'd pick the Lions. And the reason
because of competition and how they've looked.
Correct. And mainly what it is I don't think anyone in the NFC, I'm still holding out.
How about the Eagles?
That's
the
what I'm saying.
The resurgent Eagles, who honestly, they got all kinds of weapons. The only reason not to pick the Eagles is Sirianni.
Correct. And he even like tried yesterday to lose a game.
Yep.
And like that stuff does matter. But in terms of when their roster is healthy, I think that they are the same team. But the problem
is Saquon. Let's just stop and pause for a moment.
Do we have to?
The Saquon move was I mean,
I've never seen it.
If we're comparing the Thursday night football catch.
Yes.
The Garrett Wilson catch. The Ja Morant from the seat of his pants alley-oop. And now I'm going to put there right on the same shelf, I'm going to put the Saquon Barkley reverse jumping over someone
backwards. Yes.
I'll be honest. The one that astonishes me the most.
It's still the catch for me.
Is it?
Yeah, the catch was. I still don't know how he got his body down.
I've never seen anyone jump over someone backwards, ever. He had done a spin move, and then he was about, and then he jumped over someone backwards.
Yeah, but if I believe that Saquon, I've seen Saquon hurdle so many people, why wouldn't I believe that he could hurdle them going backwards?
That was just nuts.
I miss him.
Did you hate that they let him go? Were you enraged? I mean, you're not supposed to pay running backs, you know?
But at the same time, it's like, this team stinks. You'd rather, it's letting him go to the Eagles is what hurts.
Right.
It's not just letting him go. It's letting him go to your, like, quote unquote, your rival. Like, let's be real, acting like the Giants.
Our rival.
Like, I'm not putting the Giants on the Eagles' level.
Right, exactly right.
It is a historic rivalry.
So anyway, so back to the question. You would, the Lions have,
I mean, to me, it's a Lions or Chiefs question. And,
some folks out there, just to be contrary, would say Ravens. They would say, look.
The Ravens aren't even winning their division right now.
Look at what the Ravens did, blasted them yesterday. Absolutely owned that game. A good Denver defense, by the way. A very good Denver defense that has been really responsible for Denver's better-than-expected season. And they just lit it up. Lamar in the first half and then Derrick Henry in the second half. And that is looking like a sort of team of destiny kind of combo, right? And it is amazing how quickly things can flip. Wasn't it 2 years ago? Lamar wasn't coming back from an injury. Yep. Were they going to give him a contract? Everything was nasty, and it felt nasty in Baltimore.
Is he sitting out?
Yeah, like, is he malingering? Yeah. Whatever else. We had all of that, and now here they are. Like, those are there's no one who would pick another team. I guess you could make an argument for the Eagles, but I would really only argue for an Eagles as a possible threat to bumping out Detroit.
Correct.
I wouldn't pick
them. I would use the Eagles as the reason why you shouldn't pick the Lions.
But are they so for Kansas City, if you don't pick Kansas City, is it because you think they have more formidable opposition in the form of the Ravens and possibly the Bills, then that is more formidable than the Eagles? Or is it because you think they haven't looked impressive even as they've won every game?
It's twofold. It's one, I think the AFC is going to be tougher to get out of. And then two, like, there's a reason why we haven't seen a team win three straight. Like, at a certain point, it's just all these playoff games that end up being one-score games, it's tough to just always come out on the right side. Even Brady didn't always come out on the right side.
Do you believe that your answer to this question, and I don't know what it would be, have you told me the answer to this
question? I think I would go Lions.
Okay. Do you believe there's anything that is likely to happen or could happen tomorrow that will change that?
No, because I don't think anything
else. So the Lions could go to an edge rusher, which could
solidify
solidify your pick. The Chiefs could go get another wide receiver.
Yep.
Which is the thought that they might do that. I don't know if there's anything. I guess
there's the Commanders. Baltimore, are sitting here at 7-2.
It's funny. Why don't people, you don't take them seriously?
Because they have a rookie quarterback.
You have a rookie quarterback. You don't take them seriously. Yeah, and I think that's kind of appropriate not to take them seriously. We do have, as you point out, the Ravens not even winning their division right now, and they've got the Bengals Thursday night. That is a very tasty Thursday night game. Now, interestingly enough, that's one where people are wondering if the Bengals, who are never active at the trade deadline, whether the Bengals will be active at the trade deadline simply because their defense so clearly needs help.
Yes. I mean, you even let the, like, that Raiders game stayed close for way too long because they really can't get stops. And the Raiders just fired their OC.
That's true. That's true. You make a good point there. In terms of the Cowboys, should the Cowboys be sellers? I do think if you are a Cowboys fan, what really enrages me as a fan, it's not if my team is bad. It's particularly not if my team is bad because of injuries. And obviously, Dallas, they've had some injuries. And now Dak, we've got the injury question with Dak going forward, etc. What really enrages me as a fan is if my team doesn't do what it feels like everything it could do to be good.
Yeah.
In a season when it's trying to be good, right? If particularly if the fan base is telling a knows what a team should do, and for whatever reason the that is enraging. And so the inability that they're basically do nothing offseason that Dallas had set this up. We should have seen it coming. Most people did see it coming. And then you're clearly, you're paying your stars. It means you're in it to win it,
right?
You're in it to win it, and you don't do everything. And your answer is to bring back Zeke as your running back? That's who's clearly washed.
And then go get Dalvin Cook.
And then, like, it's that would enrage
me. And then you keep telling us why you couldn't get Derrick Henry.
Why you couldn't do it. Of course you could do it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be a Cowboy.
Yes.
And now he's having the year that he's having. That would absolutely enrage me as a Cowboys fan. In fact, I don't know if there's a fan base that I think should be madder. Is there a fan base right now that should be madder? Maybe yours? Maybe the Giants? Like, whose fan base is right to be furious?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys, because the Cowboys had legitimate expectations. Like, this is a you know, acting like they were going to win 11 games was not insane. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's fun though. Tonight we got the Bucks Chiefs. It is funny, but there's been no talk of the Chiefs going undefeated.
Correct. And yet here they are.
And yet here they are. But still, like we're not visiting those old Dolphin players,
right,
and stuff like that. It's not. Because they haven't been winning in such a way that makes you think that they could go undefeated.
They win every game by 7 points.
But here they are. So maybe they'll get their first L tonight. Over at FanDuel, new customers can get $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins on tonight's game. Put together your own same game parlay. Patrick Mahomes might be involved in that. Hey, they have, by the way, pre-formed same game parlays over there at FanDuel. You can jump on one of those. Again, if you win a $5 bet, you get $150 in bonus bets if you bet on tonight's game. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what's coming up next?
Here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Jeff will join them at 1:25. Norton Hurd joins me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munns will join us at 2:35. Pre-game tonight for the Nets game will be at, I believe, we've got to double check. It says 6:30, but I think it might be 5:30 because they'd be on the East Coast. We've got to check on that. But Grizzlies and Nets tonight, you can hear it right here on 99.9 FM ESPN.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. Again, big day tomorrow because we've got college football rankings. We've got the trade deadline.
Maction.
And we've got Maction.
Yep.
All on a big Tuesday in America. We'll rejoin you then. We got to get out of here. Thanks for listening. Our work here is done.